This is Omar Musni with UN News. Mass rapes of women during wartime were described as atrocities which dehumanize by a minister in the United Kingdom government on Tuesday, as representatives from around the world gathered at UN headquarters to mark the annual International Day for the Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict. Lord Ahmad is the UK's Special Representative on Preventing Sexual Violence in Conflict and a Foreign Office Minister. He was one of those taking part in a high-level panel discussion on the plight and rights of children born of war, organized by the UK and Argentina, focusing on recent events in Iraq, Syria, and Myanmar. Daniel Dickinson asked Lord Ahmad why the issue was so important.
It means a great deal to me. When you see conflicts around the world, and often the people who suffer the most are the most vulnerable, and within those most vulnerable are women and children. And there is also men, young men, who have been impacted by this. It's those vulnerable groups that we must protect. And I am passionate about it, as the whole government is. This was an initiative set up back in 2012 by the then Foreign Secretary, William Hague. But it's been one of my greatest honours to take this specific role as the Prime Minister's Special Representative, because you're helping those who have been victimised in the most horrendous way, who've had criminal acts committed against their person, and you're standing up for those people. You're standing up to bring justice and accountability, and you're also standing up to ensure that they get their rights and they're able to once again lead normal lives as best as possible.
And of course, the issue of children born of rape in war is particularly emotive. That's the issue you're discussing today.
Indeed, as we mark this particular day of the elimination of sexual violence in conflict, when you look at conflicts around the world, let's look at in the current context, we've seen as Iraq begins to again build its state, one of the areas we've been working on very specifically is on the justice and accountability mechanisms within Iraq. The United Kingdom has led the way, particularly on Resolution 2379 and ensuring there's also money in support of bringing accountability. But on the issue of children, the Rohingya crisis, which we see engulfing Myanmar, Burma, Bangladesh, these are young children who were born through no fault of their own, through a crime committed against their mother. Why should they be held responsible? Why should they be stigmatized? Why should they be ostracized by communities? Therefore, we've been very much looking and talking directly to communities, including faith leaders. If you look at the Iraq experience, When I was in Iraq not so long ago, a couple of months back, I saw for myself, particularly with the Yazidi community, I met the Yazidi women. These were victims. Some of them had had such crimes committed against them that they could hardly speak. The atrocities that had been committed against them, they had been dehumanized as not just a race, but as a human being. And then to rebuild the strength, to be able to sit down and talk through that experience. These victims are incredible and phenomenal individuals and human beings. We need to strengthen their voices. We need to ensure they not just are identified as survivors, but advocates. But within the context of the Yazidi community, I saw the spiritual leader of the Yazidi community make a very clear message that he sent to his community himself, which was these children are also victims, and ostracizing them or marginalizing them is not the way forward. Therefore, his statement was particularly relevant in ensuring that as these women begin to build their lives, as their children begin to build their lives, that the community that they're an integral part of, once again, not just accepts them, but helps them overcome these great crimes that have happened against them.
Getting together with other countries to talk at the UN is obviously very important. But how will what you're discussing actually change what's happening on the ground?
Well, first of all, if you look at collaboration and collective action, what does the UN constitute? That's exactly its whole raison d'etre. The reason for being is how we can work together on these important issues. The resolution that we passed on Daesh accountability ensured that kind of resolute, collaborative approach. And the next mechanism is about ensuring those victims get justice. That's why the UK has been at the forefront of ensuring the mechanism is in place. And then we need to ensure that there's funding in support of those mechanisms. It's no good just talking about it. We've got to be seen to be acting and then act itself. And that's exactly what we're seeing happening in places such as Iraq.
And you've talked about providing greater support for survivors. How does that look? What do you envisage with that?
Well, if you've been a victim of these crimes against you, if you've had the brutality of rape being committed against you as a person. It's not just the physical support you need, it's the emotional support. We need to ensure experts are trained. There's not just empathy, it's the right person and individual. So when I was in Iraq, I met with the mayor of Baghdad, for example. Then I also visited Mosul. And what is the real need and the acute need there is when you're empathizing and showing empathy towards people, if you want victims to come forward, it's no good just saying the mechanism is set up. You need to recruit the right kind of person and ensure whether it's the judges or those providing support to the victims are also appropriately trained. And that's where much of the investment is currently going as well.
Do you think the countries where these crimes are happening most are doing enough to stop those crimes?
Well, quite often, many of these countries where the challenges exist have either gone through internal strife and civil wars or are recovering from other conflict situations. Therefore, I think the international community and here at the UN, we need that collaborative response. It's also our responsibility to help support those nations as they state build. One of the experiences I found as a minister is, yes, we intervene when conflicts take place. And we interject when we see that red lines have been crossed. We also need to ensure that the support is there in rebuilding countries and nations. And really making them stand on their feet is where the real value lies. Because the longevity of ensuring that these crimes don't happen again, those conflicts don't occur again, is ensuring the stability of those countries.
You're a UK minister, as you just said. How important is it to engage people at home? Is the British public at all interested in this issue? Does it know about this issue?
Well, I think the underlying principle that in ensuring that the public are aware is that the mantle, the position I hold in this respect, is as the Prime Minister's envoy, the person who's at the head of the British government. And I'm the third person to hold this particular role. And William Hague, now Lord Hague, was the first one as Foreign Secretary. It underlines the importance that this is at the heart of government. It's at the top of government as a priority. And it's important through the contacts such as interviews I'm doing here, but also through our actions as well, that we demonstrably are seen to be helping people around the world. And you know us Brits, when we look at Britain as a country, and I'm proud to say this, one of the things when we look at philanthropy, we look at support, you look at our development programmes, I would argue that that reflects the real nature of the British people. And they not only respect it, they actually value it as part and parcel of what defines Britain today.
But the issue doesn't directly affect Britons or Europeans or anyone in a developed country generally. It must be a difficult sell.
I don't think it's a sell at all. You appeal to, we always talk about values of countries, what define values. For you and I, for anyone across the world, and for us in Britain, the most fundamental value that we aspire to, that we hold very dear to our hearts, is the value of humanity. And it's that value of humanity, the principle of humanity, which prevails.